Hello, this is Anthony Gismani with a special welcome to our podcast this week. It's the 45th annual Vancouver International Wine Festival, and we'd like to welcome you from wherever you're listening worldwide. Our show today is brought to you in part by our hotel partner, the Weston Bay Shore Vancouver, home base for the BC Food and Wine Radio team while we're at the festival. If you're considering visiting Vancouver, there's no better place to be than the Weston Bay Shore. Steps from the West End, Stanley Park, and Vancouver's famous seawall with stunning North Shore Mountain and Cole Harbour views. Now, enjoy the show.
And now, it's BC Food and Wine Radio. Live from our spotlight stage at the 2024 Vancouver International Wine Festival. Now, here's Anthony Gismondi.
Hello, British Columbia, and welcome to the 45th annual Vancouver International Wine Festival. We're coming to you from the floor of the Trade and Convention Center, and we're surrounded by 149 wineries from around the globe. As you know, the festival is celebrating 45 years this year. The first festival was only one winery, Robert Mondavi. We did a little tasting over town. We sat around, drank water, acid, and fruit, and then we had a glass of wine. People lined up with great pleasure to sit down and listen to the Mondavis talk about wine, and they'd never looked back since then. Now, tonight we have a busy show, and of course, it started with Mondavi, but tonight we're all British Columbia. Arno Thierry joins us. He's from Champaign, but now the winemaker at Church and State Winery in Oliver, BC. So we're going to talk about Church and State's products. And you know, they make wines in both the South Okanagan and over in on Vancouver Island. So there's lots of to talk about there. Grant Stanley's back, of course, from Spearhead Winery in East Kelowna. We're going to talk about white wine with Grant today, and then we're going to talk a little bit about a single vineyard he's fallen in love with over on the west side of Okanagan Lake. Richard Kanazawa, winemaker from Bench 1775. Let's say they have the finest patio in British Columbia. One step on that patio, you want to spend the whole afternoon there. And they got a great program going on there with Asian food and their wine. So we're going to talk about that with Richard. But up next, Vito Parente joins us. Now, he's from California, but we're going to talk about Italy. Tenuta di Arceno is just an incredible property that's been restored by the Jackson family in Chianti Classico. Okay, this is BC Food Wine Radio. I'm Anthony Gismondi, and you are set to go.
There's more still to come. This is BC Food and Wine Radio, live from the 2024 Vancouver International Wine Festival. Brought to you in part by the Weston Bay Shore Vancouver, our official Vancouver hotel partner, and elegant base to explore Vancouver. Book your stay today at the Weston Bay Shore Vancouver.
Penticton, the hub of the South Okanagan. Enjoy mountain adventures and reward yourself after a day on the ski hill with a visit to one of over 80 area wineries, cideries, and distilleries, or our 8 craft breweries. Experience fantastic, locally sourced restaurants, too. It's the perfect destination for a relaxing late winter getaway. Before you go, make sure to check the website for information on wine tours, tasting room hours, and highway conditions. Go to visitpenticton.com.
Escape to Tin Horn Creek Vineyards on the captivating Golden Mile Bench in the heart of Oliver's wine country. Their wine shop awaits you Thursdays through Sundays from 11:30 to 4:30. Embrace the season with their Blanc de Blanc Sparkling, adding a lively note to your winter wanderings. Explore the wonders of the South Okanagan, where nature's beauty meets the art of winemaking. Plan your visit at tinhorn.com. Ready to welcome you.
Diora, the culmination of a more than 30-year vineyard-to-bottle journey in the Santa Lucia Highlands and the family-owned San Bernabe Estate in Monterey, California. Diora's fruit from their vineyard flourishes in the radiant Monterey midday sun, while refreshing breezes coax the complex flavors found in every drop. Diora, indulgence begins in the vineyard, now available at select liquor stores across BC. Find out more at diorawines.com.
Now back to our spotlight stage at the 2024 Vancouver International Wine Festival. Here's Anthony Gismondi.
Yeah. Hello, British Columbia, across the province on the BC Food and Wine Radio Network. Our guest is Vito Parente. He's the director of sales in the U.S. market for Tenuta Arceno, really an outstanding Tuscan winery that's owned by Jackson Family Wines. Welcome to the show.
Thank you for having me.
Great to have you here. It seems like everything that Jackson Family Wines touches takes off, even in Italy.
Even in Italy, right?
Where I think the Italians thought they were nuts when they first went there.
We did not receive the most welcoming hug, let's put it that way.
Yeah. But it's a tough crowd, eh?
It is a tough crowd. And, you know, they've been doing this for a minute.
Yeah.
But you're right. You know, when Jackson Family Wines put their eyes on vineyards first, usually the intent of ensuring and maintaining the culture of that site and elevating with, you know, their expertise and knowledge. And
I mean, you know, for me personally, I was totally attracted to Jackson Family Wines as soon as that I learned that they had the most hillsides and the highest elevations in all of California. And I don't know, at the time it was about 12,000 acres, probably more now. I thought, well, these guys are serious.
Yeah.
Like, they care. And I remember when they went to Italy and there was so much work to be done and they were pulling out vines and the Italians were all thinking, who are these Americans? But they've done a fantastic job.
Yeah, it's been a work of love. We purchased this estate, it was far away, 94. Was the idea of having, of course, an estate in Italy, but realized very quickly that some of the vineyards required a lot of work and replanting.
Sure. Tell us the story of Arceno. Where is it? And a little bit so our listeners.
Yeah, it's located in Castelnuovo Berardenga, which is the southern foremost village of the old Chianti Classico, bordering the township of Siena.
Yeah.
Basically overlooking Montalcino.
Yeah.
The estate has been producing grapes. And for several centuries was owned by the Medici family for a couple of centuries and then sold to the Del Teja family in the Takis, and Jackson Family Wine was basically the fourth owner. Since then. So
what a privilege.
And the estate is very large, 2,500 acres, only 200 of which are planted on the vine.
So that's a secret.
There is. Yeah. You have to leave the land, do its job. You cannot overplant any given site.
Seem to be the masters of mixed farming and open land and forest and grapevines. Like, it's a beautiful mix.
You do have to have a symbiotic relationship with vineyard and environment. You cannot just have a monocultural mindset, because that's not going to pay long-term dividends.
I think people think I'm nuts, but I say, well, vines are like people too. Like, they know what's going on. They talk to each other, and if they're all stuck in a row for thousands and thousands of yards, there's a lot of trouble there.
There is. And also, vineyard, we often talk about terroir and climat. The quintessential piece of that is the site.
Yeah.
How is the vineyard being affected by the site around it?
Yeah.
And if you alter that site too much, the vineyard will not have a personality anymore.
Vito Parente is the director of sales for the U.S. market for Arceno. So why don't you brought a couple of wines. Let's start with, what will we start with?
We will start with the Il Fano, which is one of the three IGT, commonly known as Super Tuscan.
Yeah, widely available here in B.C.
It is. This is a classic Bordeaux blend. Merlot, Cabernet Franc, Petit Verdot, Cabernet Sauvignon. It's been the most successful of the portfolio, especially in the U.S. market, North American market, because of the affinity of Merlot and Cabernet Sauvignon as far as palate.
And you and I, we say yes, we're nodding our heads, but it's a Bordeaux blend in Tuscany.
In Tuscany, right?
Yeah. What's that all about?
If we think we're the first to do that, we're foolish. Tuscany has been mingling with Bordeaux varieties for more than 100 years.
Yeah.
Commercially, is fairly recent, like 60, 70 years.
Yeah.
But Cabernet and Merlot have been planted in Tuscany for quite a bit of time.
Yeah.
And I think right now there's more understanding of those grape varieties and more understanding that there are certain sites that are better suited for those grape varieties than Sangiovese, which is their native variety.
Totally agree. So. It's such a lovely wine, though, eh? So fragrant on the nose and...
Yeah, it's got richness. It's got a great...
It's so not Bordeaux. The blend is Bordeaux, but...
That's the key.
When you smell the wine, it's very Italian.
Do you smell Tuscany in the glass?
Totally.
I mean, that's the key. If the wine is not quintessential Tuscany, it doesn't matter the grape variety you use.
Mm-hmm. Wow. And it's just a baby to boot. This is, by the way, we're chasing a 2020. This is the current release?
2020.
Yeah, fantastic.
So one that has done very well for us, the one that is widely distributed in great restaurants, in some retailers.
Yeah.
Yeah, we're very happy with this because it's opened the door to the entire estate.
Yeah.
When I came on board more than 12 years ago, the estate was driven mostly by the IGT. The Chianti Classico portfolio was struggling at the time.
Yeah.
Right now, it's thriving.
I mean, yeah.
It's,
yeah, I was going to say, like Chianti Classico, now there's a sector that's having a moment in Italy. And it's almost a repeat. If we think about when the first Super Tuscans came out, it was kind of the same deal.
You're right.
Chianti was garbage, and even the Antonori said, we've got to do something to, you know, pull up the image. Mm-hmm. So they went that way with Super Tuscan. Now they're all back in Chianti Classico and really working at it.
It is a product of collective effort. You know, what happened with the Chianti Classico 2000 project, where most producers decided to gather and select the right clonal material for the region.
Yeah.
That was an effort almost 30 years ago.
After a few thousand years, they got together.
They got together, right?
Yeah.
not easy. But I think it's paying huge dividends. Right now, Chianti Classico, in my opinion, is delivering pound for pound the best quality in the bottle.
Yeah.
You can find $20, $30, $40 bottle of Chianti Classico rivaling the cousins in Montalcino.
So this wine, I don't know this wine, it's new to me, Strato Alsasso.
Strato Alsasso, which is an ode to our founder, Jess Jackson, Jess Stone Street Jackson. So Strato Alsasso is a play on Stone Street.
Yeah.
This is one of the very few blocks when we acquired the estate back in 94 was still safe and sound.
Yeah.
We just made some changes as far as trellising.
Yeah.
But it's a beautiful Sangiovese block, southwest facing.
Yeah.
And we found out later on that it's planted on Sangiovese Grosso, which is the same variety used in Montalcino.
Yeah.
Producing very little yield. We're looking at 2.5 tons per acre.
Yeah.
All sandy soil, all galestro. Yeah. The wine is aged for about 24 months in neutral oak and kept 36 months in the cellar per Gran Selezione specs. But it's been a wine that has brought the portfolio of Chianti Classico back into their spotlight.
My guest is Vito Parente, and we're talking about the Tenuta Arceno. In this case, Tenuta di Arceno, the Strada Alsasso, which, by the way, is the Gran Selezione.
How is
that doing? And can you explain? I mean, it's new. It's not so new now, but it seems to be getting accepted.
Finally. I think it was a great move for Chianti Classico. The next step would have been to go Gran Selezione attached to the village, which is something that it will come. But I firmly believe that is the next step for Chianti Classico, focusing on not only the qualitative aspect, but also the site-specific aspect. In fact, we as a farm, we will have a second Gran Selezione into the market next year because we have identified 2-3 other blocks. They are worthy of Gran Selezione. So they're very distinctive from one another.
Now, you work in one of the most important American wine companies in the world today.
Yes.
And you're talking to me about place and villages. What do you see in California at the moment? Is that something that you think is going to happen there, that there'll be more and more of that kind of storytelling winemaking?
There is.
Village by village?
There is. I live in Napa Valley. And Napa, I would say, the birthplace of luxury wine in America. And right now there is an effort into site-specific, vineyard-specific Cabernet Sauvignon, which are the core of that region. And I think it's something that we've seen in Willamette Valley, Oregon, for instance. If you go today, you have vineyard-specific Pinot Noir. They're rivaling the cousins in Burgundy. And you go to Santa Barbara, you'll find a very similar story.
Yeah.
And I think it's a good way.
Or you go to Vancouver Island.
That's right.
That's right. Wow, this wine is delicious. I'm just having a sip now. 2019, there's been a run of pretty good vintages in Italy. Global warming hasn't hurt them. It's changed the wine a bit, but are you also adapting in the vineyards?
We are looking at canopy management a little differently.
We're pushing
a little bit our farming practices, because in the past there was a bit of an approach that was a blanket approach. Right now we're looking at site specific harvesting,
right?
Because you have to. The quality otherwise will suffer. Mm-hmm. And we need to adjust. We need to adjust to a climate that is consistently moving in different directions.
We're almost out of time, but let our listeners know about the property, because they can actually go there. They can stay there, I think.
Yes,
or
you can
you
stay
have
there.
Places to rent. Or
you would fly into Florence, take a train, go to Siena, and there is actually a small train, or you can taxi to San Guzme, tiny little village.
Yeah.
It will take you back in time. It's like walking to 500 years ago.
Yeah.
The village has roughly 15 inhabitants. It is truly magical.
Wow.
I would encourage you to go visit. There are a couple of small Michelin-rated restaurants. They're very affordable, by the way.
Yeah, yeah.
Just around the corner. So truly wonderful.
It's a great place. If you want to discover the real meaning of the culture of food and wine, these are the kind of places to go to.
Indeed.
Vito, great to catch up with you. Thanks for coming to Vancouver. Please come back.
Thank you. I will.
Yeah. It was Vito Parente. He's the director of sales for the U.S. market for Tenuta di Arceno. He's been our guest in this segment. Plenty more to come on the show. Up next, Richard Kanazawa. He's the winemaker at Bench 1775 on the Naramata Bench.
There's more still to come. This is BC Food and Wine Radio, live from the 2024 Vancouver International Wine Festival. Brought to you in part by the Westin Bayshore Vancouver, our official Vancouver hotel partner. An elegant base to explore Vancouver. Book your stay today at the Westin Bayshore Vancouver.
Your next corporate event or retreat deserves the best. The Watermark Beach Resort. With conference spaces to host large or small gatherings, they can create your perfect event or gathering. Enjoy the culinary excellence of 15 Park Bistro, open daily for breakfast, lunch, and dinner. Make sure to follow them on Instagram and Facebook at 15 Park Bistro for the latest updates on their brand new dinner series. To make a reservation or learn more about events at Watermark, just go to watermarkbeachresort.com.
Hi, this is Paige Schultz, marketing manager at Visit Penticton, calling all craft beer lovers. Penticton is the place for you this spring. Joining me is Kim Lawton with the Penticton Beer Blocks, Penticton's craft beer collective. Kim, what makes our city such a great destination for craft beer lovers?
Our craft breweries truly are special. We work together to give Penticton one of the best craft beer scenes around, and we were recognized for this when the Lonely Planet named us Canada's Craft Beer Capital. We're also thrilled to have some fantastic craft beer-related events in Penticton, such as the Okanagan Fest of Ale.
That sounds fun. Tell us more.
It's one of the largest and longest-running annual beer festivals in the Pacific Northwest, giving beer lovers the opportunity to sample a range of craft beers and ciders from over 65 breweries and cideries. There's also great entertainment, fabulous food, fun, and games. This year is on April 12th and 13th at the Penticton Trade and Convention Center.
Amazing. Thanks, Kim. For information on Festival and all other events and activities in Penticton, go to visitpenticton.com.
It's BC Food and Wine Radio, live from the 2024 Vancouver International Wine Festival. Now, here's Anthony Gismondi. This love has taken its toll on me.
She said goodbye too many times before. Hello, British Columbia. Welcome back to the show. Our guest is Richard Kanazawa. He's a winemaker at Bench 1775. Pretty much dead in the middle of the Naramata Bench.
Exactly.
I probably shouldn't have said dead. That was a bit insensitive.
No, it's a good one.
How are you, Richard?
I'm good.
Yeah?
Yep.
It's good to see you.
It's always good to see you guys.
I still dream about sitting on that patio, having a little bit of dim sum or whatever, and drinking your wines.
It's a good place for that, and the occasional beer that I sneak out there.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, it really, come on, it's one of the most beautiful patios.
It is.
In the wine world. Like, people think, oh, well, you're exaggerating. No, you should sit out there one afternoon, and you'll see it. Anyway, really great to catch up with you.
Me too.
I do want to start, because we have been sort of talking to people on and off about what's happening in their vineyards. What's happened in the middle of Naramata? Anything different than what we know already?
No, everybody's going to have damage. There's no doubt.
Yeah.
If you're beside a lake, if you're in Coston, it doesn't matter. Those temperatures were so low.
Yeah.
You know, if it kisses minus 20, minus 25 for an hour or two, it's not a big deal. But when it hunkers down for 11 hours, minus 31.
Yeah, that's it.
Yeah, that's it. And no snow to insulate or anything like that.
Yeah.
So.
And what about the business thought of talk about to own rooted vines? Can you explain that to people why they might do better or not do better?
Instead of grafted?
Yeah.
Yeah, just because that's the stock, the root stock of it. And, you know, that's the...
Maybe some people don't know, but you take the European vinifera and you graft it onto an American rootstock.
Yeah, you basically have trained guys to come on and, like, I don't know, glue them on and away they go.
And we do that because the rootstock's good for the soil or it's good for whatever,
that's right.
It's not good for
freezing. It's not good, yeah. I mean, and then you look on the opposite of that and, you know, people will talk about hybrids and you're like,
No. But own rooted, so it means you just stick it in the ground and it grows its own roots.
That's right.
So it will push new stuff up if it's...
Hopefully. I mean, that's why you don't hear the exact number of, you know, what is going to happen. Because come May, if you see some green on a plant, it should be okay.
You kind of have a good story at 1775 because you have a lot of wine. Like, you have wine squirreled away here and that and this and that. So tell me a bit about that. You're going to have plenty of wine, I think.
We're going to be all right that way. You know, it's funny because when I came on board, my focus was like, let's get this thing moving.
Yeah.
You know, and now it's like, okay, so I guess that maybe I was wrong.
Maybe,
But, you know, we haven't seen this in the valley before.
Yeah, no.
And so that's...
So you're just coming into like your 2020s. Is that right? Your reds?
Yeah.
So,
My bigger reds, like the Bordeaux blend style reds or... the Merlots and the Cabs, they're not even out yet.
Yeah.
You know, so I'm looking forward to those coming out because they are, you know, have my fingerprints all over those
ones.
Sure. And all my whites and bubbles and that have been out.
Yeah. We're speaking with Richard Kanazawa. He's the winemaker at Bench 1775 on the Naramata Bench. What's the ethos at, if you wanted to tell people what's happening, what do you do at Bench 1775? What would you tell them?
I would say, since I've been there, the focus is on making wine with the fruit that we grow.
Right.
We have lots of vineyard.
Yeah.
Since I've been on board, we've shrunken down the SKUs to just really make what we grow.
Yeah.
And I think that's a good focus. It's a good business plan.
Yeah. Which is what then? So what you grow, what are you focused on?
Okay, there's
then?
A lot.
Yeah.
There's a lot we grow. And our owner, Eric Liu, has in the last few years really accumulated a lot of vineyard.
Yeah.
A lot of them have been maybe on a good deal. It wasn't with what wine we're going to make on that, which then just falls down on me.
Yeah.
So I've got a lot of interesting grapes, you know, like I've got something like Zweigelt that I have.
Yeah.
Then I have, you know, all the usual suspects, like the Merlots, the Cab Franc, Cab Sauve, Syrah, Malbec, Petit Verdot. Sidebar, that is one that actually stings my heart a little bit because in 2022 we had that cold snap. We're picking ice wine before the red grapes and the whites were off.
Yeah.
And that vineyard in Costing got pulled out for a replant in 23, and it's probably going to get pulled out for a replant.
Again.
Yeah, so that, you know, the one thing I would say about all that sort of stuff is that if we really think about it, even as an industry, maybe we can plant a little bit more thought and plan.
It's a bit of a reset in some ways, and so I kind of like that. And anyways, vines don't live forever.
Yeah.
We'd like them to become old vines, but often vines do get replanted at a certain time. They just don't go all at once.
So. No, exactly. And so, you know, the ethos of the winery is to just make those wines great and be creative in what we use it for.
Like, yeah.
Obviously, I'm not would be a fan of like making a Zweigelt red, but... I'm using it in, I tasted an Austrian sparkling, which was Chardonnay, Pinot Noir, and Zweigelt. So I did that. I'm using some of that Zweigelt to make a Lambrusco style. So I thought that would be kind of an interesting grape to be able to go that way.
Yeah.
So, you know, I've talked to a few of the guys that are around town, and especially the Italian guys that like that, and they're very interested.
Yeah.
And,
And just quickly, because I say you're on the Naramata bench, but you've got fruit all over the valley then, right?
Yeah, we do. We have Naramata, Summerland, and then we're into Costin.
Yeah, and Costin, I like that.
Yeah. You know, I've had experiences using Costin fruit before, but it is different. And I do enjoy it there. I mean, it's hot. It's a bit of a different profile than when you get out of a Soyuz.
Yeah.
I mean, it's a bit juicier.
Yeah.
But I do like that fruit, and I think it works with the oak that I use. I think it's a good match.
Okay, you brought a couple of wines. We should get to them.
Yep.
Let's start. What are we going to start with here?
The Blanc de Blanc.
Yeah. This is a 2020 Blanc de Blanc.
2020, I think the first time you tried it a few years ago. What I did was when I did one sit at Bench in 2012, and I made a bubble Zera Blanc de Blanc. The 2020, again, is Blanc de Blanc. We released a third after the first year, another third after the second, and now from next year on, every year we release our Blanc de Blanc. It'll be 3 years to the... So,
36 months on the lees. That's good. We like that.
Me too. I mean, there's a big difference between 24 and 36.
Yeah.
Yeah. And so, yeah, a good sparkling program. And we're really just trying to focus on those things. Obviously, we make a little bit of ice wine. So there's that too. Which I have to tell you, Tony, I cannot believe how many people are trying ice wine.
Really?
I was blown away.
There's a resurgence.
Was there a resurgence in the first place? I'm not sure.
But yeah, maybe you're right. There wasn't.
Yeah, but I can't
that's
believe
great.
I tell people, like, you know, when I'm working in the cellar on this stuff, like, I'm wondering who drinks it.
Yeah.
Now I'm like,
well, who does drink it? Is it young or old or just anybody?
It's
or?
All over the place. But
really?
You know, and I guess I understand why. I mean, I think last year there was only 4 people that registered, and the year before was only 8.
That's true. There's less of it around.
Yeah, so, but people are flocking to it, and I was shocked, honestly.
You know, I have, I should count, but I probably have about 90 bottles of, half bottles of ice wine.
How old are they?
They're super old.
Like they're the best.
They need to be drunk. They're old, like they're 20, 25, 30 years old. Like,
yeah, well, you get in that 15, 20, and they're...
I'll have to bring some up for you and just leave them with you.
If they're well made, then it's great.
Yeah, well, a lot of them are Riesling, so they got a chance.
You know what?
I'll
take that re-gift from you anytime.
Yeah. Okay. No problem. Oh wow, that's a shot. All right, let's move to the red before I'm completely gutted here.
All right, so we're on to the Syrah.
Yeah.
And
okay, I'm really worried about Syrah because of all the damage. Like, 100%. Is it going to survive? Are we going to have any Syrah in the valley?
I don't think so.
People won't grow it again?
Well, people will grow it again for sure.
Oh, they will.
Hey, people are probably going to grow Tempranillo and other stuff too.
Yeah, well.
I know that's another discussion.
They can do that,
I get
but,
it.
But Syrah, I mean, took a beating, and I'm just worried that people will say, well, I'm not going to plant it anymore.
It's too, I don't think that'll happen. People will grow that.
Hmm. Okay, so where's this Syrah from? It's Milkamine.
Yep. So that was from our Caution
Fruit. Yeah.
And so this is...
Yeah, it's got that wild sort of stony thing going on.
It is, and this is like a young plant.
Yeah.
And so I had really high hopes for that. I even had high hopes for the Malbec that came off of that.
Yeah.
So we'll, fingers crossed, and we'll see what happens.
It's nice. I like it. It's under screw cap, too, but there's no reduction, really. It's nice.
Even
well,
I'm
not saying that you sell reduced wines, but a lot of people, their Syrah is reduced under screw cap.
Yeah, you just can't do that.
No, you can't. And it's avoidable.
It's completely avoidable, and you just got to make sure it's perfect when it goes in, or when the consumer opens that up, or you do at home, you're going to get it. Right?
Good job. Okay, so what's happening for now, the summer, whatever, you open, will be open, how
we're
do people
open
go?
Already.
You're open already?
Yeah, and...
Can I drop in, or I need a rezo, or how does it work?
No, you just drop in.
Yeah?
Yeah,
okay.
I mean, the rezos were a thing that was working, but... It's kind of gone now. People are just coming in all
okay.
the time.
And you still have the food program going or
yes,
it'll
we
start
do.
Up? Or?
Yeah, it'll start up in April.
Yeah. It's pretty cool. Can you say something about it quickly to people?
Yeah, you know, it's our wine shop manager, Josh. He's got this bistro going. It's the Korean stuff because he is Korean. We have a little bit of dim sum that we have. And then it's kind of some... fusion-like dishes that he's got on.
Yeah, it's great. I think it's fantastic. Like, it's really exciting to have that and then sit around, try the wines, and, of course, be on one of the world's most beautiful patios.
And to be honest, it's nice to have something that's not... and, look, I love pizza like everybody else, but it's nice to have something else, too.
Oh, yeah, for sure. Well, we won't scare everybody off.
Yeah, well, the dim sum's great.
Yeah. Richard, fantastic to see you.
Always good to see you.
Thanks for coming by and sharing the wines. And good luck with what unfolds.
Yeah.
But it sounds like you're going to make it through.
We will. And just, you know, you got to take it as it comes, right?
Yeah.
That's all you can do.
Perfect. Thank you, man.
Thanks, Tony.
Richard Kanazawa, he's a winemaker at Bench 1775. Still to come, Grant Stanley, he's a winemaker at Spearhead Winery. We're going to talk about vines and wines that Grant's tending to in East Kelowna and other parts of the valley. It's BC Food and Wine Radio. I'm Anthony Gismondi.
There's more still to come. This is BC Food and Wine Radio, live from the 2024 Vancouver International Wine Festival. Brought to you in part by the Westin Bayshore Vancouver, our official Vancouver hotel partner. and elegant bays to explore Vancouver. Book your stay today at the Westin Bayshore Vancouver.
Diora, the culmination of a more than 30-year vineyard-to-bottle journey in the Santa Lucia Highlands and the family-owned San Bernabe Estate in Monterey, California. Diora's fruit from their vineyard flourishes in the radiant Monterey midday sun, while refreshing breezes coax the complex flavors found in every drop. Diora, indulgence begins in the vineyard, now available at select liquor stores across BC. Find out more at diorawines.com.
Penticton, a year-round mecca of adventure and wine. Get to know Penticton at the 7th Annual True Penticton Tourism Expo Sunday, April 7th from 10 till 3 at the Penticton Trade and Convention Center. Learn more about all the fantastic things to see, do, and explore, and the places to play and stay in Penticton. Sample great local wine, spirits, and craft beer with a chance to win some fantastic prizes. Admission is free to this family-friendly event. Go to visitpenticton.com for more upcoming festivals and events in Penticton.
Your favorite wines delivered right to your door. It's easy when you become a Liber Estates Rebel. Rebel Wine Club members enjoy regular shipments of Liber wines for your cellar, along with complimentary tastings, VIP treatment at the winery, and more. And with easy and convenient online ordering, your wine will be at your door before you know it. Discover more at LiberEstates.com. Simply great wine.
Many people ask me which wines they should buy. My first question is, what do you like? Because when I know what they prefer, I can nudge them left or right to something similar, but often better at the same price. But if you don't like the wine, nothing I can say will change your mind. Taste is a personal thing, so ultimately, it's up to you to find a wine writer who aligns with your taste and start from there. I'm Anthony Gismondi, and I invite you to visit my website, gismondionwine.com, to find out if we can agree on something to drink tonight.
It's BC Food and Wine Radio, live from the 2024 Vancouver International Wine Festival. Now, here's Anthony Gismondi. Let's go tonight. Share the spice
of life. Hello, British Columbia, across the province on the BC Food and Wine Radio Network. Our guest is Grant Stanley, winemaker, Spearhead Winery, in East Kelowna. Grant, great to have you back.
Great to be here.
Always
for
good
sure.
to see you. You've been tasting a lot of wine.
I have. This festival is so much fun. I love coming down here for this.
I can't imagine like getting out of the cellar and then coming here and seeing, you know, a few hundred wines that just reinvigorates everybody.
It does. And, you know, strangely enough, I always catch up with a ton of colleagues and friends from the Okanagan when we're here
we don't see up there.
Yeah, totally.
Yeah, that's
so
great.
It's ironic, but also all the agencies and all the people that I've gotten to know over the last 23 years now in this industry here in BC.
Right on. Well, there's lots going on in BC, but today I did want to talk about white wine. But before I get to that. Let's talk about this new vineyard you've been talking about up in Summerland.
Yes.
Well, you're very excited.
I'm very excited about it because it seems to be extremely winter hardy, meaning it's in a great location with good airflow, and the vines are, they're all grafted vines, but the last couple of years, as you know, has been tough for viticulture in the Okanagan, including the last winter. And this vineyard seems to have managed to kind of brave it and get through it. With good viticulture as well.
You said airflow. Can you explain that to the listener? What does that mean?
There's a suck or a pull from the lake, and it's helped by the elevation of the vineyard.
Right.
So it has good drainage of air.
Yeah. So it moves the really cold air out. It doesn't let it sit around.
Absolutely.
And do damage.
Exactly. Yeah. So last year they had less bud damage than all the other vineyards that I've been sourcing fruit from.
Yeah.
And so I'm optimistic, cautiously optimistic, of course, that when spring comes, they're going to have a decent crop to work with.
This might be an odd question, but is it planted with the stuff that you want, or is it?
It is.
That's just super fortunate.
The only thing that I wasn't working with that they have in the ground, the owners planted Gamay there. Tyler Chick is the owner of the vineyard and a super good guy and a great farmer. They have Pinot Noir and they have Chardonnay, so that's a no-brainer.
Yeah.
But the Gamay Noir is a real treat because, of course, as you know, it's a Burgundian variety,
sure.
And so it kind of falls into my line of thinking.
Yeah.
Last year, I made a little bit of red wine with it. I made 4 barrels of red wine that I'm going to assess and look at and see in the grand scheme of things if I want to keep going down that track.
Yeah.
But I also made some beautiful rosé with it.
Okay.
And in my years at Quail's Gate, I used a lot of Gamay for rosé, and it is a perfect variety for that. It has great acidity and great freshness and just some really, really, really nice tacky aromas.
There's still looks like some pretty strong demand for rosé, too.
Definitely.
Yeah.
Definitely. Yeah.
All
it's,
good.
It's for us right now. It's hard to make enough wine, Tony, which is a good position to be in.
Yeah, true enough.
Yeah.
You brought a couple of wines today. Let's just talk about Pinot Gris in general in BC, because there's so many styles. A lot of them I don't care for, but the top ones I love.
Yep.
What's your take on Pinot Gris?
Well, in my opinion, Pinot Gris has a tendency to be a little flabby if it's left on the vine too long. It can be soft and sweet and luscious and all the...
Like a salad bowl.
Or a
fruit bowl.
Maybe, some beautiful fruits. But for me, though, what's very important with this wine is to make sure that it has the acidity to hold it all together.
Yeah.
And we're blessed with that in the Okanagan, so we should be showcasing that, picking a little earlier. At lower bricks so we're not overcome by alcohol and raisining, because it's one of the Pinot family. So, of course, the moment it reaches maturity, it goes into a shrivel mode and you're losing juice and gaining concentration all the time, which is great with Pinot, but not so good with Pinot Gris.
Yeah.
So
tanks?
It's a steel tank.
Concrete?
And
barrels? What?
No, a little bit of barrel. The barrel just for some complexity. I tend to, I use about 10% in barrel, old barrels. When I'm finished using them for Chardonnay, maybe 3-4 years old, I start putting Pinot Gris in them.
Okay.
And I lees stir them because I want that contact with the lees, trying to build a little bit of texture without sweetness.
Yeah.
This is the key with this wine because it is genuinely the sweetest wine I make.
Yeah.
And certainly is. If you dry it out, Sid Cross thinks it's awesome, but it's a tough sell.
I think it's awesome, but nobody wants to drink it.
Yeah. Yeah.
I always think people will get around to that, but somehow they just don't. Maybe by the time they get to be my age, they get around to it, but.
Well, I don't know. It depends. You know, sometimes age doesn't help. You get a little more of that acid reflux coming on, and you're looking for wines
true
that are
enough.
Softer and juicier as well.
Yeah.
But no, certainly this wine, I've held this, back in 2008, I made a wine, a Pinot Gris at Quail's Gate, and I topped it with Chenin Blanc.
Uh-huh.
So basically, it ended up being about 5% of the wine at the end of the day was Chenin Blanc. But as you know, Chenin Blanc, a lot of tacky tones and big acid, and it really did well for itself.
Yeah.
And I remember thinking after that, this is a wine that needs acidity, and that's what it is.
Right on. Okay, so that was the Pinot Gris from Spearhead.
Yep.
It's 2022. I have it at $24 roughly.
Yeah,
I think
it is. It's the
pretty good price.
Best value wine that we have, without a doubt. And our customers and our wine club love it. And you know, as I say, it's challenging to find the grapes to keep this going for sure.
Chardonnay more winter hardy than Pinot, or
they're about the same.
They're about the same.
Yeah, they're
same
about the
family,
same.
Really,
has a big relationship, not just obviously vineyard site, but also what the crop was the previous year.
Uh-huh.
How hard you drove the vine,
right?
And certainly, some growers like to maybe exceed the tons per acre a little more than they should, and,
so if you
and
make
they
a
pay
big
the
crop,
price.
You get whacked.
Yeah, without a doubt.
Why is it just they get tired, or are they like people or something?
They work too hard, and they just
can't
protect themselves in the winter. They don't go into dormancy quick enough, and it ends up being open for any bad event that comes along. This Chardonnay has been sourced from my good friend Graham Duncan, who I've been buying grapes from. We actually grow some of the fruit on the Spearhead site as well, but a good chunk of it comes from Graham's vineyard on the Naramata Bench, so a little more southern, a little more little more heat. And Graham does a great job and has produced good fruit there year after year after year. So, and the clone
95.
Is kind of interesting because, I've had the opportunity to work with numerous clones, all French clones, In the valley, and without a doubt, Clone 95 has stood up year after year after year as being the reserve wine or the best wine in barrel every year.
Yeah.
And so now it's pretty much exclusively what I buy or what I grow.
Yeah.
And we planted a fair bit around the place, and always it's going to be Clone 95 for sure.
I think we should taste this wine. What do you think?
Yeah, let's do it.
Let's do that.
Yeah.
Also, screw cap.
100%.
You're never going back, right?
Oh, that would be an asinine decision for sure.
and yet, so many people, a lot of people are going back to cork at the top end, and I'm thinking, why are you doing this? Like, it doesn't make any sense to me.
It literally doesn't make any sense from every perspective. You know, I tell the story a little bit when I was in an opportunity to change from cork to screw cap, and I went to Portugal, and the good folks at Amarum Cork gave me a wonderful look around the country, and they said, you know, here's what we can do. We're doing all these great things to change and create the perfect cork. And I said, well, at this moment, you know, 3 to 5% are my returns coming back into the winery for either oxidation or cork taint or whatever. And they said, we think we can get it down to about 1 to 1.5%. And I'm like, no, that's not going to work. You know, lucky you guys aren't making airline parts, right?
Yeah, exactly.
So it's a no-brainer decision for me. We use a really high-end screw cap in respect to we have a lot of choices when it comes to the liner.
Yep.
So we make the right choice for each wine in terms of how much breathability we want in there.
Yeah.
And it's a beautiful technical closure.
Which is a great point. People probably don't know that the liner that's in the capsule now is very flexible. You can change them out for whatever you want.
For whatever you want.
For how much ingress you want of oxygen or whatever. And that makes a big difference.
It does. And every one that comes off the bottling line is exactly identical.
Yeah.
And this is the key to this closure is that... So whatever the perception out there in the public, I feel that it's my duty to make the best wine and put it under the best closure.
Yeah.
And so that's what we do, for sure.
Yeah.
I'd still use a few corks. I buy about 150 corks a year for Magnum bottles.
Mm-hmm.
But it doesn't come with any trips anywhere. It's basically now it's just t-shirts. Like I get a t-shirt that says Amarum Cork America. Corks are gluten free or something like that.
There's enough magic in a magnet to allow corks to be in it, I guess.
I guess so. Well, that was something that they said to me. They said, well, what about the magic? Well, the cork, what about the magic? And I said, look, if your magic and romance is coming from a piece of tree bark, then you need to have a look at yourself, really.
Lots of people planning. There's a lot of talk about wine clubs that might be the only way to get wine for a while. What's going on at Spearhead? Can we get in, or is it full, or how does that work?
No, we haven't. At this point, we haven't capped the wine club because they have been the group or our supporters now, and some of them for over a decade, and they're a growing number. Of course, with the economy, how it's been the last year, we've had a few people pull out, either for reasons of economic reason or for their health. I've heard that one. I'm like, oh, geez.
Wow.
You know, how unhealthy could it be not to have a Spearhead Wine Club membership? So our wine club is upwards to 1,000 people.
Yeah.
For a small winery like us, it's
a
lot of production.
Yeah.
And we offer them library release wines, lots of super fun events at the winery.
They make a wine.
And they get to make that's kind of become a little bit of a draw and an unusual thing that they get to blend their own wine and effectively call it theirs.
Yeah.
But, you know, they're a wonderful group, and when we have them to the winery, it's great to interact with them, and really, really grateful to have that group. And also, our little tasting room is very close to Kelowna, and so it's become a regular happy hunting ground for many, many locals, and we're always happy to see them as well.
Yeah. Well, we're happy to see you, Grant, and we don't want to take too much more of your time. I know you want to get out in the room and taste a bunch of wines. Will you be tasting Brunello, Chianti Classico?
I was at the Italian event this morning.
Oh, yeah.
Exploring in the new Italy, and
that's so
it was
great.
Awesome.
Yeah, so they are having a moment in Italy.
They are.
Yeah,
for
really
sure.
Great.
And the white wines are a beautiful price point as well.
Yeah, and creative. Incredible. Thanks so much.
Ah, good
Always
to be with
good
you
to
again.
See you. Yeah. Grant Stanley, winemaker, Spearhead Winery in East Kelowna, British Columbia, in the Okanagan Valley. Still to come, Arno Thierry. He's a winemaker at Church and State in Oliver, BC, who's come out of Champagne to make wine in British Columbia.
more still to come. This is BC Food and Wine Radio, live from the 2024 Vancouver International Wine Festival. Brought to you in part by the Westin Bayshore Vancouver, our official Vancouver hotel partner. An elegant base to explore Vancouver. Book your stay today at the Westin Bayshore Vancouver.
Attention wine connoisseurs. Iron Gate Auctions are bringing you the chance to indulge in some of the most exquisite back vintage wines from Canada's most exclusive private collections. Each bottle sold individually so you can pick and choose to your heart's content. With an average of 3,000 available per auction, there is something for everyone at all price points. And the best part? Inexpensive temperature controlled delivery available right to your door. Visit irongateauctions.com to start bidding now.
Most people have a casual connection with wine, as in they like to drink it. We think it's essential to read the label and whenever possible to connect with the people who make the wine. They energize you, and unlike many businesses, they'll answer most all of your questions about where the wine comes from and how it's made. Then the next time you pour a glass of wine, you'll realize it's more than just something you like to drink. I'm Anthony Gismondi, and wherever you are in your wine journey, we'll meet you at gismondionwine.com.
Diora, the culmination of a more than 30-year vineyard-to-bottle journey in the Santa Lucia Highlands and the family-owned San Bernabe Estate in Monterey, California. Diora's fruit from their vineyard flourishes in the radiant Monterey midday sun, while refreshing breezes coax the complex flavors found in every drop. Diora, indulgence begins in the vineyard, now available at select liquor stores across BC. Find out more at diorawines.com.
It's BC Food and Wine Radio, live from the 2024 Vancouver International Wine Festival. Now, here's Anthony Gismondi.
Hello, British Columbia. Across the province on the BC Food and Wine Radio Network, our guest is Arno Thierry. He's the winemaker at Church and State in the Okanagan Valley, and of course they have a property as well on Vancouver Island. Arno, welcome back to the show.
Thank you.
Hello. Great to have you here.
Thank you.
It's good to be in Vancouver. Taste some wine.
Yes. Yeah. It's always a great pleasure.
Yeah. Could be fun to taste some Italian wines.
Yeah. Yeah. It's always interesting to taste other wines.
Yeah. Always good. Well, it's great to catch up with you, Church and State. How are things going? I mean, you have launched. You worked in Champagne.
I studied in Champagne.
Yeah. And so you're making sparkling wine now at Church and State as well.
Yeah.
How's that going? How's the project going in general?
Well, it's going well. We are doing making three products now.
Yeah.
So we started in 2018.
Yeah.
And so now we are all equipped. We have our own tools for all the process of the winemaking. So we do some sparkling Blanc de Blanc Chardonnay with some grapes from the Okanagan, but we do the process on Vancouver Island with our tools.
Yep.
And after, we have some Pinot Gris on Vancouver Island and Pinot Noir. Exclusively from the island.
Yes. Which is quite different, eh? Like, people maybe don't realize how different the fruit is on Vancouver Island, say, versus the Okanagan.
Yeah, well, the climate is very different. The soil is very different.
Yeah.
So we have more freshness. The aromatic is a little bit more on the freshness, citrus, and lime.
Yeah.
And so it's very well adapted for the sparkling. Mm-hmm. So yeah.
Yeah. Well, we're going to talk about this wine today because you brought a bottle of the Blanc de Blanc. This is 2018, I believe. Yeah.
Yes.
So it's kind of in a nice window right now at about 6 years old or 5 years old, I guess. Years old.
Yeah.
Almost six. Is it a good time? Like, when you make this wine, what sort of aging are you thinking about?
We did the process, and we do the disgorgement on the needs.
Yeah.
So when we say it's 3 years, it's at least. We start to release, but when, for example, the bottle we have in front of us, we disgorge 3 months ago. So,
okay.
So it's like RD and
yeah.
some
oh, that's good to know.
So we for all of our wine, we do that because we have small tools, so it takes time. And also for the consumer, it's better.
Yeah. Can we tell on the bottle if when it's disgorged or not?
No. There's nothing on the because, well, it's,
you need to tell us that.
Yeah. Well,
so we see the longer time. Yeah. And that's an important part of sparkling wine, is the time on in the bottle on the lees.
Yeah.
What's happening there? What is it that's happening?
Well,
in the bottle?
Well, the thing is when it's a kind of aging.
Yeah.
And so the yeast will make the second fermentation.
Yeah. It sort of feeds the wine, doesn't it?
Yeah, disintegrated.
Yeah.
And so it feeds the wine and gives them some monoprotein or some
complexity and texture, maybe?
Yeah,
or?
Yeah. It gives some volume in the mouth. And also the bubbles, they get thinner.
Yeah.
And more softer. So it's less aggressive. It's more a foam.
Yeah.
And it gives some volume to the wine.
Yeah.
So
a creamy character too, perhaps.
Well, in French we say crémant for some sparkling wine.
Yeah.
It's crème is cream.
Sure.
So it's what we try to do.
Yeah.
Is to give some creamy sensation.
And are you pretty impressed with making sparkling wine in BC? The result.
Yeah. No. Definitely, I think there's a good potential because we have a good acidity conservation.
Yeah.
And so it gives us the main thing.
And do you make 100% Pinot Noir sparkling wine?
Yeah, we do. So now we have a kind of trilogy.
Yeah.
So we have the Blanc de Blanc, so made with Chardonnay.
Yeah.
We have the Blanc de Gris.
Yeah.
So it's made with a gray with Pinot Gris. With gray grapes, so Pinot Gris. And we have Gris de Noir, which means light rosé. Gris in French, it means light rosé.
Ah.
So it's a light rosé made with Pinot Noir.
Yeah. Yeah, lovely wine. Thanks for bringing that. Yeah,
thank you.
Yeah, that was an important point to talk about. So the wine, you disgorge it as you need it to sell it. So so this 28 vintage is getting older in the bottle as we go down.
Yeah.
Yeah, which is great. A sort of pre-aging for you folks if you're not selling it yourself. I think it's a good way to go. Okay, I also want to talk a bit about Roussanne because people don't know that much about Roussanne. You're growing it. What can you tell us about this variety? Where does it grow? How do you treat it?
So Roussanne is from the Rhône Valley, from the area of the middle of the Rhône Valley in France, the east, southeast of France. And usually it's blended with Marsanne or Viognier. And Roussanne we have is white grapes grown in Oliver on the black sedge bench. And so we call it Roussanne because it's a little like gray grapes. So it's a copper color. And it's very interesting in Okanagan because it keeps, as I said before, the freshness of the fruit.
Which is hard to do.
Yeah, in some region it go quick.
Yeah.
And so we lose with the maturity, we lose the acidity and the fruit. Here we have still fresh fruit and acidity, so it's kind of interesting grapes in Okanagan, like the Viognier and the Marsanne.
Yeah. So along that vein, making Rhone wines or Rhone-style wines, is that something that you might see in the South Okanagan as we move forward, that there could be a place for those kind of wines?
Well, yes. I was a little bit surprised, to be honest, when I came in here and I saw the Roussanne, Marsanne, and Viognier, which are, we call it second late harvesting grapes. So we harvest them around mid-October, which is kind of late. But give some good results and very good balance naturally almost every year without working hard. Some grapes sometimes we have to balance to think some earlier harvest or later harvest.
Yeah.
This one we don't have. We just have to wait when it's ready, and it's ready and it's good.
Sort of self-regulating.
Yes, exactly.
Yeah,
and it's
nice.
Important because it's a it's the key of the terroir. The terroir is talking.
Yeah. Lots of talk about the Okanagan. It's been a tough winter, two tough winters actually. But we don't really know the whole story yet, do we? We'll have to wait.
Last year we had damage and we know it, and but we had a lot of we had a small harvest.
Yeah.
But a lot of vines survived.
Yeah.
This year we don't know yet, and we wait to see.
Yeah.
We can hope, because sometimes vines they have good resilience, and they can be surprising.
Yeah.
So I hope it's okay. And while we were talking about the Roussanne and Marsanne, last year they did well.
Yeah.
And didn't know that because they are from the south of France, so they are not very used to this temperature.
They're not used to that temperature, no.
So we knew that Riesling is very resistant for the cold, but Roussanne Marsanne, they did well.
Yeah. What do you think about the potential of BC wine in general? I mean, you've come out of Europe. You're in BC now. Do we compare? Do we compete? Are we equal? What do you think about all that?
Well, I don't really like comparison, because we are all unique. We have different terroirs, so the different climate, different soil, different conditions. So, but we don't have to be ashamed of the result we have. We are young, so we have to work, we have to learn. We learn every day, and that's the big difference from the Europe. They are learning for centuries, so they have a big past. But there's a good potential, and when I came here, I was impressed, and I'm still impressed of the progression, because we're still progressing fast.
Yeah.
We are improving well. And also what is very interesting is the diversity of product we can do.
Yeah.
We are very free, so we can try.
Yeah, a lot of freedom.
And also as we have a very the climate can be if you wait long, you can grow Petit Verdot.
Yeah.
But the early grapes, they are good also. So it's sometimes in Europe, it's not this way. Just we have a very stable, except the cold. But when we have the harvest season, it's very stable. So
most wineries are saying it's going to be a normal season at the winery. There's wine from previous vintages. So at Church and State, what's happening all year? The people can come and visit. Is all that on ongoing? And
We are open, and we are welcoming people, and
And you have wine to sell at the moment.
Well, no problem with that, because I make wine that they can age.
Yeah.
So that's my my way to make wine. I think that's one of the quality of the wine.
Yeah.
And so no problem for the moment. In the future, I don't know.
Yeah,
but
we'll see. But
yes, for the moment, we have one.
Now people can come by and check it out.
Yeah, do the tastings.
One.
And
you have all the wines, even the sparkling wines, in the Okanagan, and it's the same mix for people. Either wineries.
Yeah, exactly. We have two wineries and two tasting rooms, and we have the same same wines on both place.
Yeah.
So.
Well, Arnaud, always great to see you.
Thank you.
I know it's been a tough year, but who knows? We'll see. We'll see.
Thank you.
People are resilient. Vines are resilient. It's a long-term project.
Well, the thing is, agriculture is this way. And I think when we think about what happened in Europe in the centuries with the Phylloxera milioidium.
Exactly.
They passed through that.
They
so
made
hopefully,
it. We'll make it. Yeah.
We'll make it.
Yeah, I remember we talked about the 56 frost in Pomerol, and there was never going to be any more wine from there, and, they survived.
They have to replant, and they have to work, and now they are back.
Yeah. Great to see you.
Thank you.
Have a good time in the city.
Yeah, you too. Thank you.
Arnaud Thierry, he's a winemaker at Church and State in the Okanagan Valley, and, of course, over on Vancouver Island. Hey, that's it for our show today from the Trade and Convention Center. Special thanks to our technical producers, Mike Whittingham on site, Dwayne Bishop back in the home studio, Simon Editor Sherry Caleb, and Director of Operations Stu Ferguson. I'm Anthony Gismondi. I'm wishing you all a great week ahead and an even better glass of wine.
that's it for today's show from the 2024 Vancouver International Wine Festival. Brought to you in part by the Westin Bayshore Vancouver, our official Vancouver hotel partner. An elegant base to explore Vancouver. Book your stay today at the Westin Bayshore Vancouver.